Corbinmatic, what up? We in the building. Say what's up in the comments, people. We're gonna get started. We're gonna get crack-a-lacking, if you know what I'm saying. Let me just get this set up for you. Ernie, what's up, man? Becky, what's up? Thank you for joining us. We are live. We are live, Ernie. Pin that comment real quick. Just let them know, let people know we're here. Got to start rapping right now. Yo. Welcome, welcome, come in. Just setting up the ting. You know the way the ting sets. Thursday evening, 21 questions. Just let the people know. Leave a comment how you're feeling today, how you've been, what you've been up to. I'm sure you've been on lockdown, they won't let me out. Let me just set this all up. 21 questions of Eddie Caddy. My brother. I wrote Laddie. Just set all this up. You thought I was going to drop a 16 problematic? Not yet, no way. This ain't the platform, this ain't the platform. SVM, SVMX, that is a name, welcome. Mr. Caddy in the building. And we'll go live with Mr. Caddy in a sec. Welcome, guys. What's the time on the Rolex? All right, we've got one more minute. I might try to bust a little. Should I bust a little lyric? If you want me to bust a little freestyle, put a comment in the comment box. Let me see what I got. Yo. Dust off the cobwebs. Let me know if you can hear me clearly. Yo. And he said, I might as well give you a quick freestyle. what we got? Let me see. Let's see. Alright. Hey, Miss Joyce, how you doing? Listen. Brainchild of the Most High. ASOS jacket, hat, low when I walk by. One hit away, I guess it's excellence or nothing. Can't ignore the fact my heart's yearning for something. Church fanfare, blank stare, I just stood there. Sometimes feeling numb to the feeling. I preach hope but still need it. Speak peace but can't feel it. Scarred hearts, they need healing. That's enough. That's enough. Yo. Chibazo, welcome, man. Tina. Tedalicious in the building. Welcome to 21 Questions with Eddie Caddy. And if you're from the Democratic Republic of Congo, I want to see your flag in the comments today. We're representing. Get in Africa, welcome. If you're from Congo in the building today, I want to see your flag. Flag it up. Flag it up. Flag it up. Flag it up. 21 questions. This is where we ask our guests 21 seconds. 21 seconds. 21 questions. They have one pass card. They have one chance to skip a question. If they don't use that card, then they get their present at the end. They get their gift at the end. That's how it works. Hey, Eddie. Let's see that flag. Flag it up. 21 Questions with Eddie Caddy. Welcome. And if you're not from Africa, don't worry. I still want to see your flag. Jamaica, where you there? UK, where you there? Anybody from the US? Anybody from Ireland? We got Gabriel. Bless, man. Walking. Not domestic recovery. That is a name. Welcome. In the building. I go by the name of IC. That's ICIE. If you want to follow anything I'm doing, it's ICIE Music. But we're going live today. 21 Questions with Eddie Caddy. D. Eddie Caddy. First black comedian to sell out O2 Arena. 13,000 tickets gone. Yeah. Big up Cressy Beats. My researcher. Thank you for the support, man. Seriously. Big up my wife. Dealing with the baby. Helping take care of that. Giving me the chance to do this. 21 Questions. If you're not following the Sit Down UK, make sure you are. We are a live event company. Obviously, Corona's got us out of service at the moment, but we're going to be back. But until then, we're going to be here with 21 Questions. Mr. Seth Shun, welcome. We welcome you. All right. I'm going to give people 2 more minutes and then we're going to start at 9:05. Mm-hmm. How's everyone doing? Leave a comment in the comments section. Let's see how you're doing. Mm-hmm. If you want to follow anything I'm doing, it's ICIE Music. Let's get this out to people. Make sure you tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to get locked in right about now. We're going to have some fun. Dun, dun, dun. I think that's about it. Setting all this up and then we'll be on our way. What's the time on the Rolex? We got 1 more minute. Then we get crack-a-lacking. Firella in the building. They are. According to us, they are. Gabs Annabelle. They are. We'll see ya. Live in effect. You've got 1 more minute just to gather people in. And we're just going to get started and get cracking. Busy week. Okay, but tomorrow's Friday. Bless. Trust me, try rest over the weekend. Definitely. Oh, the one and only Anita, big up, welcome, man. In other news, Candice, my gang, my people, family, welcome. All right, it's 9:05, so we're going to get cracking. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 21 Questions, presented to you by the Sit Down UK. The Sit Down is a live event company where we get people from different spheres, different industries, guests. We welcome on our guests and we interview them. We ask some amazing questions that try and delve a bit deeper into who they are and what their life is about. Now, coronavirus, anti-corona has got us out of business at the moment, out of service. So what we're doing, we're running 21 questions. That's not going to stop us. We're going to jump online and run this Insta Live segment where we get a guest. We ask them 21 questions. Now, this guest has one pass card, meaning they can skip only one question. But if they do not use that pass card, they win a prize. This prize I'm looking at on the table right now, our guest wins that. Now, you being here and watching this Insta Live, you're a big part of what we do. Okay, so jump on the comment section if there's things that touch you, that you connect with. And if you have any questions yourself, you can throw them in there, whatever section where you have your own questions as well. What else did I want to say? Yeah, actually, you can watch this afterwards. Now, normally it goes on the Insta Live, but if you missed that, you can watch back on YouTube. We've also got a podcast, okay? So everything is in the link in our bio. Everything's in the link in our bio, our YouTube page, our podcast, and you can listen to all these recordings and also past events if you choose to. All right, cool. Without further ado, I'm going to welcome the man, Eddie Caddy, and we're going to have our 21 questions. I want to shout out all the people that's just jumped in. Psycho Online, welcome. Meek Phil, my brother, congrats on your wife's birthday. Happy birthday. P Designs General, welcome. Embroidery Co, welcome. All right, let's get this cracking. So I'm going to invite Mr. Caddy. Wait, go live with. All right, cool.
My guy,
my brother, how are you?
What's good, man? What's good?
Oh, I'm well, man. I'm well. Oh, good to see you, man. Good to see you.
You too, as always, bro. I put on a blazer for you, you know, Icy. I put on a blazer for you because this is what I'm saying, bro. If we're going to do it just because you're at home, come doesn't mean you can't be swagged up.
Does that mean you've got jogging bottoms on right now?
Not gonna lie to you, bro. Not gonna lie to you. Just in case the camera kills, I've made sure I've got my trousers on too. You ain't gonna catch me slipping.
Let me see. Show me.
Oh, you think I'm joking?
Okay. Just to make sure.
Bro, let me tell you something. You see, because it's a global pandemic we are going through, it doesn't mean that our swag has to also be COVID-19. Do you understand?
No, can't diminish.
Corona ain't affecting my swag. We're here presenting a show. You know what my pastor back in the day always used to say? He said, if you want to get that great job, you have to be that person before you get it. If you're a banker, you have to wake up in the morning, put on a suit, take your briefcase, go downstairs and just watch TV. And so the day the job comes, be ready. So me, I'm not trying to forget. How to stay, you know what I mean, clued up when you come out. I don't want to walk out there in my boxes, bro, and a wife beat a vest. No. I need to be ready. So this is practice.
Oh, man. How have you been in this kind of like corona time?
I've been good. I think it's been, of course, a lot of people have lost lives. I've lost some close people as well. And just before we even begin, I just want to say, you know, my condolences to anyone watching right now who's lost a close one, or I've got family suffering from it. We will come through this, but don't really have answers at the moment. But I personally would like to say that God is the answer. I'm always saying, you know, when God's wisdom, when our wisdom stops, God's wisdom begins, man. So I've been leaning on the Lord, be talking to my family. I've been indoors like everybody else, but I've kind of change energy towards something else. You know, I've realized that I can't get on a plane and be performing on stage or go to a radio show and stuff. But what I've realized is that I can actually do the things that I may not have had time to do. So I've recently launched an initiative for Africa called In for Africa, which is it's an initiative that's it's encouraging all Africans of influence to come together to actually show solidarity for those who are back home going through a worse situation than we are. There's people who don't even have access to the information that we do. And in order to come together to just be able to actually spread the right information and eventually at some point raise funds. So I've teamed up with the World Health Organization with that as well and a few other organizations. Wow. And we had the actual launch earlier today. So I've been able to just in the last 14 days achieve something that probably would have taken months and maybe a couple of years to because of some amazing people who have also made time during this hard time. So not everything is negative.
Yeah, awesome.
You know.
Awesome, man. Awesome. I wanted to do 21 questions with you because, one, you're a brother from the heart, do you know what I'm saying?
Way back, Black Brick days. Yeah, man.
And just kind of pick your mind because you are someone people see or know for comedy and hosting, but you're someone, there's so much layers to you. And I want people to see that side of you as well, because the stuff that you're doing in Africa, it's crazy and inspiring. And I think that is more, that's closer, comedy is close to your heart, but Africa is your whole heart. And I really, really want to unpack that today, man. So thank you for joining us, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate that, man. We've been trying to get this conversation going for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
But what are you going to do? So you're on 21 questions. Welcome to 21 questions. You are going to have 21 questions. So you've got 21 questions to go through. You only have one pass card.
One
pass. Your pass. All right, one pass. That enables you to skip a question if you don't want to answer it.
Okay.
But if you make it all the way without using that pass card, then you get a prize. I've got a prize right here for you, and we can send this out to you. Does that sound good?
So if I answer every single question, I get a prize?
Yes.
You will send out to me.
I'll send this out to you.
Amazon Prime, like time, day delivery.
Where are you? Are you in UK?
I'm in London.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, that's it. All right, that's all right. We've got you. So, big up to everyone that's just joined us. 21 questions with Eddie Caddy. We're going to get this popping. All right, so the first question, we've got a quick fire round. 10 questions. Light work. Light work, though. It's light work. You ready for the light work?
I'm not. I've never been ready for you, IC. I've never been ready, but you know my... Let's go.
Amen.
Let's stop it.
All right, cool. So, first off... what's the last album you bought?
The last album I bought. What's the last album I bought? Burna Boy,
okay. Cool. Next fire question. Favorite color?
Blue. Navy blue, to be specific.
Okay. Morning person or are you a night owl?
Night owl. Oh, no.
What's the latest you've been going to bed?
Oh, 6. 6 a.m. And sometimes I've got to be up by 9. That's life.
Serious?
Bro. Yeah, because you know what happens sometimes? I reach a certain time and it's too late. My eyes won't shut.
It's true.
And also because now all these Zoom calls, because man never did all these Zoom calls. Understand? I'm talking to people in LA who are 8 hours behind. Some people in the next areas are a couple of hours ahead. You know me? So after a while, you kind of go, well, it's 3 o'clock now. Let me just go quickly on Netflix and finish up Ozark. That's what's been happening.
YouTube or Instagram?
Instagram. Yeah. I think for me, I mean, I come from the era where YouTube was just coming through. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of people that latched on. I didn't really latch on. It did all right for me in the early years, promoting some of my earlier one-man shows. But I didn't really latch on because it was a process of, you know, loading up videos, waiting for it to upload, then taking the link, spread the link around. Instagram came and said, my friend, it looks like you are struggling here. Can I just help you a little bit? And Instagram basically became an octopus, bro. You just put the video instant. It goes out to all the people that you needed to go to. And then now you can embed it on Facebook. You can send it out all over the place. For me, Instagram is the place where I've been able to connect with people the most, for sure.
Nice. Favorite vegetable?
Oh, yam. Bro, nobody should talk to me anymore. I'm telling you now. I was going to say
broccoli or something.
What? Me? Do I look like a rabbit? Bro, this guy is telling me about broccoli, you know. Bro, broccoli is there. We talk. We have a conversation, but you see yam's my bridget. I go raving with yam. Let me tell you my love affair with yam, bro.
Yeah.
I remember one of the first, the earliest trips I had in Africa. Years ago, I was in Nigeria. I went to a place called Ajao Estate, which is on the mainland. Yeah. And for breakfast, which you have yam, egg, with beans and some corned beef and some chicken on the side. Bro, that was the thing. And then over the years, I've gone to different parts of Africa. In Ghana, you go to a rave, right? And literally, there's a place called Bloom Bar in Ghana. They give you fried yam. Love. So I've now mastered how to fry yam. That's what's keeping me going in this house. Me and yam. My name is Eddie Yam. My name is Eddie Yam.
Yam. Okay. I'll know what to bring you next time. What's the last book that you read?
I'm currently reading it right now. I did finish it. I wanted to revisit it before I went to the next book. It's a beautiful book. It actually talks about... the book talks about not being too ahead of yourself, yeah? So the idea is that if, you know, sometimes we tend to think about things that we shouldn't have to think about during that moment in time. So it's about controlling, trying to figure out ways of controlling yourself. And you think, in terms of, oh, man, me, I serve God. God controls my mind. But actually, it's not telling you not to serve God. It's not telling you not to follow God. It's actually just allowing you to understand that sometimes we panic too much because we think of what if, instead of actually dealing with what's going on right now.
What is it now?
And the purpose A Purpose Driven Life is one of my favorite books of all time. And I've just, I received A Purpose Driven Life 2 from my sister. I started reading it, but I haven't yet finished.
Okay. Who, who's the author for The Power of Now?
The Power, I need to remember the author. I believe, I need to get you the name. I can't remember the name of the author.
Google that real quick.
Yeah.
Okay, because that sounds like, I'm someone who's
from that a lot. It's a great book. It's a great book.
Power of
it's a beautiful, like, it is really powerful. I had a conversation with one of my friends, and he was like, because when you start reading the book, it feels like it's challenging you to really go deep into your mind. Yeah. But the simple fact is, I could relate to it because I do think ahead too much. I'm not even aware of some of the thoughts that I've had take a trip around my mind, and then it gets manifested later on because I've been thinking about those things. So, yeah, man.
Okay, I found a guy. So it's Eckhart, yeah?
Mr. Eckhart. Yeah, big. That's the book.
So, guys, what I'm going to do, I'm going to post that in the chat if you lot are interested in checking that out.
And also, the Purpose Driven Life as well, Rick G. Warren.
Purpose Driven Life, That's amazing, man.
That set me on my way. Big shout out to David Ajella in the building.
Nice. All right, cool. Next question. You've got about three more. All right. Okay. So, what is that one now? Next one is what's your favorite Netflix series at the moment?
Or
program, actually?
Series. I've just finished watching Caliphate on Netflix.
Caliphate. Okay.
One of the best series I have seen. Caliphate, actually, it puts you in a position where you've got to think about what people actually do go through. We watch TV all the time, we watch the news all the time, and we're about all these attacks and terrorism and ISIS. But this actual series follows the story of of young ladies in Sweden and their journey in being groomed into joining the ISIS, and the angle of what their parents all go through, what the families go through, the angle of the person who's doing the grooming, the so-called terrorists, what part they play. But the way it was just filmed, I really thought that was a part of it. But I finished that in maybe 3 days, 4 days. I was in. And Caliphate is amazing. And I've gone into Ozark. Of course, I finished Money Heist. a long time ago.
Have you completed Ozark?
I'm first season Ozark. So I'm way behind. Ooh. And everyone's like, it's a slow starter, but then you're going to get into it. So me, I've been persevering with this slow starter. But can I suggest another series? This series is not on Netflix. It's called Succession.
Okay.
All I'm going to say is find it how you want to find it. Go on Google and type and let it come out for you. Because Succession. I found it in it. It's called Succession. It is amazing. It's about a media mogul family as well. And it just talks about greed and power and just family dynamics. Okay. But I'm in with my series, man. It's a great way to wind down.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Two more. Okay. Favorite item in your wardrobe?
Favorite item? Right now, my African attires, man. I've had a few done in Ghana. My good friend Eugene had a few made for me. So that's what I've been on my kaftan look. I mean, my up and downs. You understand? I believe that sometimes we've got to put away the blazers and just put on the kaftan. That's also that's also our formal wear. So those are my favorites. I mean, I'm a trainer, man, but I pack the trainers away. Kaftan will focus.
Just shoes. Last question then. Who is the last person you text? Who's the last person you text and what did you say?
The last person, just now, before we came on.
Yeah.
Dorothea Hodge, funny enough. Okay. So that's the lady I was speaking about earlier. And I was like, that was amazing. I had a text from her earlier, but today was amazing. You know, but
what does she do?
So she is the person, the brains behind the operation of this entire initiative that I was talking about earlier. So she has a communication and PR company called Equitas.
Okay.
Tony Blair, she's Tony Blair's former advisor. She's Guyanese, a black woman, amazing. Come on. But I went to her with this concept, and she's now, she's brought it into fruition. So we were texting each other, just like, well done, the conference was amazing. But prior to that, it was my dad. And he was just like, did I miss the live conference? I was like, Dad, you missed it. But it's all right, I'm going to get you the recording. So yeah, those are the last two people.
All right. Well, Eddie, you are 10 questions in. That was easy, right?
I don't know if that was easy. But I don't even recognize you, bro.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you've just joined us, we are this is 21 questions of Eddie Caddy. Eddie is 10 questions in. He has one pass card. If he uses that pass card, he does not get the prize that I'm looking at right now. However, if he doesn't use it, goes through all 21 questions, no pass card, he wins this right here, what I'm looking at.
I might have to start borrowing passes the way we're doing events. Pass me the wristband, please, bro.
So, let's go on. We're going to go deeper. So, you're from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and you lived there, and you left around, what, 8 years old?
So, I was 8 years old, eight going to nine.
What was it like in that period of time, just living in Congo and your childhood in Congo?
You know, when I do my stand-up, I'm always talking about my experience of Congo, and I've got jokes about waking up to gunshots. You know, the alarm, my alarm clock was the gunshot, and people in Congo don't blink because they sleep like this all night, waiting for the next gunshot. It's all a lie. I never experienced any of that. But you know, just for the sake of comedy and feeding the stereotype, I always try to play with people's mind. But actually, I had left before we really go into the civil war that of course went on to turn, it became a sort of little mini genocide in Congo. Well, not mini genocide, a massive one. But I left when I was 8, and I can remember just a peaceful time. Of course, at the time, at that time, we had a president, Mobutu. He was a dictator for over, by that time, I think 25 years or maybe 20 years by that time, I'm moving forward, before I left in the 90s. So there was peace to an extent. I think every country under dictatorship, they've got issues. But I'm from a big family. You know, my dad's from a family of 23, right? So my granddad had time. And of course, my mom is, you know, she's from a family of 8, 9. So like, it was a big family. I grew up a lot of people who were, my dad's siblings were my age, a lot of them, my age, and some of them younger. So I grew up around love. You know, my granddad was a known person. He was a businessman. He was what we call Igwe, a village chief. So he was a king. He would be going back and forth between the city and the village. And I always remember moments of just celebrations. I remember Christmases being wonderful, going to school, you know. So those are the memories I have of Congo. And in fact, at the time, every now and then, there would be looting. That's one of the things I did remember. Just because there's unsettlement in the country, certain people are not eating. And they'll be looting, and then you'll just see, and you might hear one or two small gunshots, but nothing major. And I was always shielded from that. In hindsight, I think back, I really was shielded from a few things. And then when it was time for us to leave, my father was just looking for better opportunity education-wise. And, you know, and God bless his father, you know, they had ways that they could make that work. So once they came over to the UK, and of course, it was a situation of where, you know, life is better here. And it coincided with things becoming a little bit unsettled in Congo, you know. And that was a period where a lot of Congolese were coming over. A lot of us, you know, were seeking asylum because there was no way you can go back. You know, there was a lot of political standstill, a big civil war. And my dad, of course, saw a better opportunity for us here, myself and my sibling, than it was for us back home.
And when did you hit the UK? Was it quite a culture shock, or did you assimilate quite well?
I think when you're younger, you just learn quicker because you don't have the worries of bills. What do I do when I wake up in the morning? Mom and dad are sorting out everything. So you've got less things to worry about. So because less things have occupied your mind, you can learn the language quicker. You can just morph into the attitude of everybody else. I couldn't speak a word of English. You know, at the time, my French was fantastic. It's not so great now. I can still converse, but my French was much better than it was, and English took over. But I spoke my primary language, Lingala, fluently, and I still speak it now, you know? So it was just a thing of realizing, man, so many black people who are not speaking Lingala. Like, there were people around that were speaking other languages that I was just totally like, this is crazy. Then you had those who were speaking English but with a crazy accent. I'm not dealing with the Caribbeans, and I'm like, what's going on? And then suddenly you had Asians who I've never, you know, been around before. I had maybe one or two experiences of Lebanese people in Africa. We have a lot of Lebanese across Africa. But like, in general, just seeing, you know, Asians, and of course, the white people, like, everywhere. I'm like, okay, this is definitely their country, you know? Yeah. But for me, being so young, it wasn't even trying to blend in. It was me just being myself. I have never tried to blend in. I worked with what I had. I remember I used to communicate with people in primary school my first few months in French. And wow. if I got annoyed, like I'll be learning one or two words, like how are you? Hey, good morning. Yeah. But bro, after that, if I don't understand what you're saying, I'll go into my French and I'll go, pam, pam. That's it. And then we just go back and forth until I started acquiring more of the language. And I think that's always been a part of me.
Yeah. What, because you also have, I've noticed with your career, you've also had that African pride, like of being African. You've never shied from it. You've never, like you said, you never tried to be anything that you weren't. Where did that come from? Because a lot of people, that's something that we learn to put aside. You're in the UK, assimilate to the UK culture. That part of you, keep it at home, but do not bring it out. But you're someone who's very proud to be African. Where does that come from?
You know, I think it's circumstance, it's purpose. I've been asked this question a few times, and I think over the years I've come to realise more and more that it's purpose. Because actually, I used to say I was born in Congo, so therefore I remembered my first 8-9 years. So that pride in me, you know, carried me forth to this land, and I had memories of things that were already embedded in me. That was like, no, that's amazing. The food that I eat is amazing.
Yeah.
The way we speak our language is amazing. You guys are missing out, right?
Mm.
But then the older I got, I also realized that not everyone had that experience. Some people came over and maybe some of them even spent 15 years and they felt alienated. So they needed to integrate as quickly as possible, almost keeping their head above water. So they took a straight left exit and just dropped all their culture and tried to, you know, attain this new culture they're experiencing. But for me, I think because there was a purpose that came with it, and I totally believe in my career now, you know. Lost you. I see. Are you still here with me? Hello. Did I lose you?
I'm here now.
I lost you for a second. But everybody's on live right now, so trust me, it's gonna be well. But for me, it felt like this is a moment for and combine, you know, and literally brought me forth to where I am now. So for me, embedded in me to just be proud. I've never seen anything wrong with being African. I've always celebrated everything that's been African. I've literally celebrated everything. Being Congolese, we already felt like, you know, we were the first ones to really do this dancing thing properly. So I took pride in that. And I wanted the rest of the world to see it. So I always loved everything.
And what would you say? Almost like, you know, when we did Afro Nation, things like going back to Ghana. What would you advise people who are born here but have an African heritage? How can they assimilate back to Africa? How can they go back to that motherland, learn more about it, be more involved? Because some people, literally, they don't know actually how to do that. They are proud of who they are, but they don't know how to connect back home. What would your advice kind of be for them?
I would say, you know, it has to be in you. Don't force it. Mm. The moment you realize that I really want to understand Africa, that piece of want, that thing will never leave you. It will never leave you. And I would say, read up. Read up on some things as well. Find your own information. Ask your parents. We really don't cherish our parents, man. We underestimate what they carry. They're carrying a lot of gems. I remember when I first went back to Congo after 18 years in 2010, I was able to connect with my grandparents and especially my granddad. Yeah. And he has so much information that I carry with me now that I would have missed out on. It added to my purpose. And I think, you know, not everybody's able to just go home. Sometimes the tickets are expensive. Sometimes family situations are a little bit political. So I say, read up. And if you can't go to your country, go to another country. You know, like people talk about, I'm going to Cancun, I'm going to Miami. Yeah, that means you can afford to take a quick trip to another country if it's not your own. Because Africa's a continent. It's so big and diverse that you're always going to find new things, you know? And I went back to Nigeria and Ghana before I went back to Congo after 18 years. And I was already able to learn so much about, you know, just being African and not just being Congolese. So, you know, don't listen to what the media is telling you about Africa. Do your own research. Ask for photographs. Ask for information from people who have traveled. And if you have the opportunity to go, honestly, go. Like, go. And, like, there's bad parts just like we have in London. There's parts in London I will never sit for. Never. You understand? There's parts in London when you mistakenly go there, you realize this is not the London. It's the same as in Africa as well. when you go to Africa, it's the same thing. There's good parts and there's bad parts, but there's always places for you to actually try to engage and understand more about your culture.
Awesome. Thank you, man. So you came to the UK, and like you said, you started to use that gift. You really started to activate that gift. And I remember back in the day that you used to do the audience of Eddie Caddy. And it was awesome because it wasn't just you, but it was like you had like a host of different artists, hosts of different guests. And you were in your prime. You sold it out. You sold out your Indigo twice. And then the big one, O2 Arena. Tell me about the thought pattern going towards doing O2 Arena, because that was so unheard of, but you did it.
Bro, you gotta not just believe in yourself, but you got so important to have people who believe in you. You know better than anyone.
Wait, hold on.
And of course, you know.
Say that again.
I said you gotta not just believe in yourself. You got to have people around you who believe in you also.
Yeah.
It's extremely important.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're doing something as vast as that, you have to have a great belief. And I was around some, you know, amazing people, audacious people. I was part of a clique called Black Grape, and we started that from university.
Yes.
And, you know, and Black Grape had a guy called Tio Yelola. You know, a very, like, he was just a visionary man. And the guy was aggressive with his ambition. You know, if he wanted to do something or make it work from university, he gathered a group of young, you know, black students, put on some jackets. So we looked good and we looked bad and we looked like we belonged in part of some sort of clan. But we went around different universities just carrying the African culture and just performing and showcasing our talents. And so many of those people, you know, were a part of those. And so many of them backed it and they've gone on to do amazing things. But, you know, with T, from connecting with him from uni and then moving on to just becoming a stand-up comedian and encouraging me to do one-man shows at a time when you're new in comedy, you shouldn't be doing one-man shows.
Yeah.
He was like, we're going to break the rules. We're going to change the game. We're going to do it in our own way. And I was so scared, bro. Like, I
really?
Bro, like, from the first show that we did at the Mermaid Theatre in 2007, it was unheard of for me to be in comedy for like a year, really, to do my own show. But I had people around me that were like, you can do it. They saw what I didn't see at the time. They appreciated my talent. They appreciated where I was going. We did our first show. Not only did we sell it, we oversold it. We had a separate room with a camera in there to show people what was going on in the main room. We moved on to the Indigo, like you said. Eventually, we did a few of those. And it was once again just encouragement. You know, at the time, I was rocking with Yolanda Brown, who was one of the best saxophonists we've ever come across and extremely talented. You know, I had so many talented people around there, people like Charlie Kenny, who was just an amazing event organizer.
Oh, Charlie,
you know,
that is just,
and it's important for me to say these names because it's very easy to have a conversation about how did you achieve certain things and for it to be like, I just rocked up to the stage and they sold it out.
Yeah.
You know, these people believed in me. So once they came to me and they said, we've got to go for the big one. And I remember at the time, the Indigo 2 was an after party venue for Michael Jackson. That was what it was set out to be.
Right.
So once Michael's done, one day, you know, so obviously Michael had passed away, the concerts were cancelled, and we decided to do another Indigo. And of course, then there was also an opening with the venue. And T came and said, bro, we've done the Indigo. I've asked them that, you know, to do the O2 Arena. They said, no, you guys are flu, do another Indigo. So we did another Indigo and we sold that out again. So once we did that, it's like we should go for the main arena. I was like, bro, relax. Calm down. You understand? But he was like, you know, when have we ever backed down from? And his vision was, we have a culture, we have a story, we have a way of presenting ourselves. We're the new generation. And we have to show people that we can't back down from any obstacles. You know, we weren't mainstream like that. We were very much from the sort of urban black scene, but we wanted to encourage our scene. And the idea was never to be the guy who came in and did the arena. The idea was to encourage people, say, let's not wait on the mainstream to find us. It's going to take us years. Let's go out and say, hey, we exist. Create our own industry. And I remember when we released the first set of tickets, just because of the hype, the tickets sold out. Like, we had, I think 2,000 tickets were done. I was like, amazing. And then for months, there was no selling. No selling. And that's because it had to reach out to the mainstream. And they were like, who is this guy? We never heard of him. And I think when I started doing my rounds in interviews and stuff, that's when people were like, man, you know what? we've got to back this guy. The black community were literally there. Nobody believes in us. We're going to show them with this guy. And literally, those are the people that rocked up, especially on the day when we had 6,000 walk-ins. 6,000 on the day of the show, which was incredible, you know? Mm. But it is one of the most amazing moments of my career. It allowed me to understand that anything is possible. It allowed me to understand that being African was enough, you know? And it also allowed me to understand that teamwork is everything.
Yeah. I remember coming to that show and I was sitting on the lower floor on the left-hand side. So I can see that, the whole of it. And I was just thinking, Eddie's done it, yo. He's done it. And it was so, and just like you said, it was a sign that we can do amazing things because everyone came together to make that happen. Just like you said, it wasn't just like a one-man band. Well, sure. Everyone came together.
Including your wife, Diana.
Yeah.
Madame Sugarcane.
Come on, big up, Diana. So it was a beautiful thing, and I'm thankful that you were audacious enough to believe that, because I remember watching like the ITV interviews, and they were like,
They were mocking us. They were mocking us, bro.
Yeah, they were mocking it.
They were mocking. They were taking a mic. They were asking us questions they would never ask. Think... How much, where did you get the money? How much have you spent on this?
We had to just be,
you know, slapping them left, right, and center. But I understood that it wasn't their fault. This is something new. This was unheard of. Of course, because even within the entertainment community, a lot of people were almost like, you can feel the tension. Like, how is he doing this? Like, why is he doing this? This is like, a lot of people were scared because every time you had a conversation with someone, they'd be like, bro, how are ticket sales? Not how's your pancreas? How's your chest? how are ticket sales? So you knew. They were keeping an eye on something else, you know? But it was, I've never done it. I thought this was something that was for me. It was something that taught me to be able to have a story for so many more who came after. So many amazing people joined me on that day, bro. Came my brother, Kevin J. You know, I had a great team of people like Governor B, who's doing amazingly well now. You know, these are people I'm so proud of. We look at Olu Johnson, Ayo Johnson, Twin B, who are some of the best A&Rs, but they humbled themselves and DJed for me on my show, you know? And so many great people that joined on that stage. We had a Tiny Tempo and Dubs and all the great UK artists who came that day just to show love, you know, the Kanos and the Chipmunks. And it was just like our community came together and we showed that everything is possible. Everything is possible.
100%. Nah, man. Big up to you and the team, man. You did actually seem to go missing for a while, though. And people didn't see you as present on the scene or in events. What happened in that period of time?
So between... I'll say between 2010 and 12, I experienced a new world. Like, I literally experienced a new world. You know, I went into a different management. I went into a conversation with people that were just exposing me to things that were totally different. And I think for a long time, especially the first 4 years of me doing stand-up and battling through, the idea was always try to push my culture as much as possible to places that were usually shut indoors, you know, for a long time. And for me, it was, especially now, I get conversations from a lot of my younger brothers and sisters who have gone into the sort of what you call mainstream management and mainstream experience, and they ask me, what's that like? I'm in a position where I can tell them what to watch out for, what to not look out for, if they're enough or they're not enough. So for those two, I would say 2, 3, maybe even 4 years, really, I remember that's how I ended up hosting the Olympics, all the men's basketball during 2012 Olympics, which is, I remember when the Olympics was announced, I said to my father, like, Dad, I need to be at the Olympics. My dad said, but you are not an athlete. Hey, sometimes you need to. So I said, Dad, there's more. I said, Dad, there's more to the Olympics than just the athlete. There's so much more that could be done. And I wanted to be a part of that. And I ended up working with, you know, UK Sports, Sports England, in connecting with the Great Britain basketball team. That's how I met up with my brother, Luol Deng. And then we eventually, through the people at Adidas as well, you know, I was able to get involved with hosting every single game of the men's basketball, be the entertainment during halftime, hyping up the crowd. And this was a global experience, you know. And during that time, I ended up meeting so many amazing people. But at the same time, I also had the opportunity to start traveling across Africa more. I realized that there was a market there. You know, as a diasporan, that I can go and perform in Kenya. I can perform in Uganda. I can do Nigeria. I can go to South Africa. And they really took me on. You know, I ended up also tapping into the mainstream world a lot more. I never performed in places like Hastings, you know. Mm. And I've gone and I think these people didn't even understand me. But these were the things that started to happen during that time. So it was a great opportunity for me to actually just do things around the world that I never had opportunities to do. And for a long time, people like, you did the O2 and you just went quiet. No, actually, I think the O2 served its purpose in opening doors. And also, whenever someone is quiet, it always seems to be, if they're quiet in front of you, it doesn't mean they're quiet in other places. People was like, what are you up to now? I said, well, London is pretty small. And it's even smaller when you're black. It's even smaller when you're black and African. It's even smaller when you're black, African, and Congolese. So, so actually, when I go to Africa, suddenly I'm not begging to be mainstream. I am mainstream because the audience is a reflection of the person that I am. So I
come on,
my guy. I can go and perform at the African Magic Movie Awards, and I'm performing live across every state, 54 states across Africa, live. You know, I can go and do the Johannesburg Comedy Festival. I can be on stage with Basket Mouth. I can host with Salvador in Uganda. I can do it with, you know, these are the equivalents of the Michael McIntyres, you know, and the Chris Rocks of Africa. And for me, I learned so much. I learned so much during that process, and I realized that being African is enough. So whenever I came back to London, it was just like, this is beautiful, but back home needs us more. You know, and I discovered through the empowerment of stop slowing down on stand up, the hosting thing took off. The Afrobeats industry was growing, and I was really invested in my brothers and sisters that would be coming over and just introducing them to this world. You know, I felt empowered that I know some things that can help them bridge the gap in so many artists in the Ice Prince Amanis and the Sarko Dears that came over to this country, in Dibanj at the time, who was, you know, doing his first concert in the UK, you know, and eventually when we had Whiskey do his first concert in the UK, we had David O do his first concert in the UK. These were all part of me channeling my energy to Africa more than the UK. So now we're in this position.
Oh, beautiful, man. And I think it takes someone who is self-aware to do that confidently. Yeah. Because if you're watching everyone and what everyone's saying, you'll be like, oh my gosh, what? Maybe I do need to do more shows in the UK. Okay. But knowing, one, again, that African pride, but that self-pride and that self-understanding enables you to do greater things than what people can see, like you said, in front of them. So that's awesome, man.
My brother, imagine being in the UK. Before in the UK, I was here. I spent how many years? And I had my head above water and I could only achieve so much. Yeah. I had to knock down doors to even get recognized via the O2 Arena. So you want me to just continue standing there, waiting, knocking doors? You have to try something new. And I knew that was my space. And I found myself in that. And I always encourage everyone to step out of the comfort zone and try and build yourself somewhere where you're not known.
Yeah. Awesome. In that time, you had a daughter. How old is your daughter?
Yes. She's two. Oh, my princess. Sorry, before I lose the battery, let me make sure I hold this. I don't want to lose this charge. My daughter's 2 years old, just absolutely out of this world. Like, man, it's crazy.
And I remember I was going to have my daughter, and I was a couple of days before she was going to be born, I was nervous. I was like, am I going to be able to do this?
I remember those talks.
I reached out to Eddie. I said, bro, I don't know if I can. And he gave me some powerful words of encouragement. And I really, really deeply in my heart, especially when I look at my daughter now, like, I really, really thank you for that at that specific time, in that specific way, because it really, 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 really helped. And I just wanted to ask that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, like, how have you found fatherhood, especially having a daughter as well?
Fatherhood has allowed me to understand my parents, and I'm so grateful that they're still alive, they're still here. In answer to that question, is going back to what you just said. I think when you grow up with someone, like we've grown up together. I've seen you as we were artists, entertainers.
Oh yeah.
You know, I've seen you now become someone's boyfriend, then a husband, then someone's, you know, then suddenly saying I'm a father. And I'm like, bro, you've achieved all those things. And I think we never actually realize how powerful we are until we're thrown in the deep end. You know, some people run away from their purpose, just like Jonah ran away from his purpose. And God said, all right, cool. I'll send you a well. Let that well take you on. Let's go. You know, and I think it's really, really important for me. Like, when I had my daughter, like, my parents had me at a young age. My parents were 19 when they had me. And I came as a surprise. You understand? And my daughter came as a surprise. And for me, but it wasn't a surprise to me. It wasn't a surprise to God. And I'll tell you why. Because automatically, overnight, everything changed in terms of purpose, in terms of responsibility, in terms of alignment, and understanding what our role is, you know? And looking at my parents and all the stresses they went through, all the time my dad used to say, you will see, you will understand, man. That's the moment when I realized, as soon as my child came out, bro, I don't think I understood what loving really was. Do you understand? Until I saw my daughter, and everything mattered. Any movement she made, any noise she made, just about where am I going now? What's the next 30, 40 years looking like? What would I want her to carry? She holds my surname. Oh my God, I hold my dad's surname. Oh, this is what it actually means. Because as soon as she says her surname, they are going to say, oh, you can't come in because your father A, B, and C. Oh, no, come in because your father, you know, these are the things I always thought of, I always think about. And actually, it allowed me to enjoy unity with my fellow brothers and brothers who have gone through that and seek advice from them. You know, my sister, who's younger than me, has got two boys. So she was the first in the family to have a child. And I remember when she had a child, I said, you are automatically older than me now. She's like, what do you mean? I said, because you have got something that I don't have. Your wisdom of being a parent, you can pass on to me. So I consider you my elder in that department. Once I had my child, there were so many things I could talk to my sister about that I wouldn't normally talk to her about. Fatherhood just aligns. It gives you an even more sense of purpose. It allows you to understand what love really means. When my child looks at me, I see, I'm telling you, I can just release my back to details. I can just release these details, even online, bam, you know?
Awesome, man.
All right. To my brother, I have to say, big shout out to my brother, this is one of my guys, one of my mentors, for real, for real. And just him being even in this conversation is a beautiful thing, because he's a real father. And he gave me some advice during those times, man. Yeah, man. A big up to Dope Black Dads as well. A great group that we're part of.
Of course.
A great group.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So time is talking the hardest.
Let's go.
Two questions. So, and this one you've got to answer quickly. How would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as the guy who did his best to make sure that Africa gets his fair share.
Come on. Preach, pastor. All right, cool. You didn't use any pass card.
Oh.
At all.
But it's you. I knew this. It's you.
It's at all. But you got one last question.
This is the one you're going to force me to use pass card.
The last question is, do you have a question for me?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do have a question for you. When I first met you, I saw you. You didn't see me, and you was rapping, and so calmly, like it was nothing, like nothing. Literally, you were so calm with it. You was freestyling. I believe you're probably, I believe Governor B and a couple of people around at that time. But it was so easy for you. I've always wondered why you never, because I know you. You like to be in the scene and come off the scene, be in the scene and come off the scene. But I've always asked myself, why didn't you just go all out? Mm-hmm. What was it that held you back? Because you is one of the most amazing, like just like MCs, freestylers, rappers that come across. Like, totally amazing. But why didn't you go all the way?
I don't know. I don't have to answer that. I don't know. I think...
You can't use a pass, bro. You can't use a pass.
Do you know what it is? I think I didn't realise what you saw. I didn't see that till maybe 3 years ago. So what you saw all the way back there, the potential, I've always heard that throughout my whole life. You can do, you're amazing, you're talented, you're gifted, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I didn't know that for myself. So though people were saying these things and expecting so much, I was like, boy, if it happens, cool. And so what people spoke over me, I wasn't speaking it in myself.
Yet. I can relate.
And so it made me, while people thought I should be there, I was over here and I was still trying to coast and go along. It was only in the last 2-3 years that I had to really spend time, like, realizing who I am, what God has gifted me with, the things he's given me. And I've realized that music is one of them.
Yeah.
But he's given me so many weapons to use in his army. And I think one of the main things is I am a creative.
Yeah, man.
And I create platforms to connect people to God.
Yeah, man.
So before my destiny was tied in music. I tied my destiny in music. I thought if I don't make it in music, then I failed in life. And so when it wasn't taking off, when I wasn't getting the sales, when a lot of people weren't coming to my shows, I was thinking, oh man, what a flop. But no, my destiny is tied in the creative things that God gives me.
Yes, sir.
I create them and I make sure that they connect with God. So this platform here, the music is one of them. But he's shown me over the last 3 years, you are not the things that you do.
Come on.
You're my son. And you, I've placed things for you to do that can connect with people. That's all I just want you to do. Create them, connect the people to me, and I'll do the rest. So that's freed me. That's actually freed me. I don't need to make an album. I can if I want to. And if I feel led to, I will. But I'm now free to fully, to be using the fullness of what God wants to use me for without being tied down to one thing.
So that makes me really happy. That makes me really happy because I think realizing what your purpose is and being comfortable with that is such a beautiful thing. And it takes different journeys. I mean, like, I'm not just saying this because we're on live and people are watching. When I came on, I'm watching you kind of introducing and talking. I'm like, hey, like, this kind of suits Ice, you know? He actually looks like he's been doing this for a long time. But it actually is normal. All jokes aside, because this interview has been phenomenal. It's been kind of therapeutic for me as well. But I think you've always glowed. There was always a glow with you, like always a glow whenever I was around you, whenever we spoke, and, you know, just whenever you performed, there was just, you always used to coast, you was always calm. And I think that is testament to how you've also tackled everything and come to understand your time is your time and everything. Now, you know, you're an amazing father, an amazing husband. And I know, you know, your wife will tell, there she is, you know, and it's just that she's great timing, but you know, but it's like, this here, I think, is important for us to remind of our potentials and to remind each other that, you know, we're here to hold each other's hands. So I really, really thank you for this conversation. I really do, my bro.
Thank you. Thank you for your time, Eddie. You made it through without using the pass card. So today I want to present you with your prize. All right.
Is it yam?
It's not yam.
Oh, my God, bro. Send it. Send it. No shops had this. Send it. I will send you my address. Bro, this woman telling me one item only. One item. No shops had this, bro. Send it.
250 milliliters of Dettol.
250 milliliters.
250.
Is this a catch? What's the catch?
No, this is real. This is
250. Bro.
It's not even apple juice.
My bro, I'm not going to lie to you. I was thinking there's one thing that's missing. I'm doing everything. Social distance. I'm washing my hands, using the soap. But Dettol, everyone's talking about Dettol. Am I doing something wrong here? Bro, I'm so excited. I might even fry yam with the Dettol. I might even use it. I might use it to dilute my juice. Send it.
I will do that. Bro, thank you for your time.
Thank you, my bro.
We're taking questions, but we've got, because of time, we're not able to. But thank you so much. Keep doing amazing things here.
Keep doing what you're
and
doing,
in
bro.
Africa. And we'll keep supporting you. And I'm going to keep posting
Info Africa. Yeah, please just a big shout out to Info Africa. Everyone, we need you guys to support. Go to infoafrica.org, get more information. Check it on my Instagram. You can get more information. This is the time where I'm calling to everyone, the diasporans, to really stick out and send messages of love and fundraise on the 25th of May. Put that in your diary. We're going to have a day where we just literally fundraise and celebrate for our people, man. God bless you all. I pray for your families. I pray for your loved one. Remember, laughter is the best medicine. I'm your local pharmacist.
Love, bro. Thank you.
Love, no brother. Problem, bless bro. You.